call the docket.
E-Foods Corporation against the County of Augusta. Joseph R. Foley, Shane L. Smith, counsel for a caller. Aaron E. Hendak, Zachary C. Trecker, Kendall C. Brian, James R. Ben Pollock, counsel for Appalachia.
You may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I am Shane Smith from Williams Mullen on behalf of appellant McKee Foods Corporation. Your Honors, this case is about the right to a fair hearing of and a well-reasoned decision on the unrefuted evidence McKee presented at trial regarding the sufficiency, or more accurately stated, the overwhelming sufficiency of the evidence of erroneous valuation methodologies used by the county's independent contractors in arriving at the county's assessments. Due to time constraints today, McKee will stand on its argument, its briefs regarding the principles set forth in the case of Stanton Mall Realty Management versus Augusta County, which the county repeatedly urged the trial court to adopt and follow, and under which the trial court found McKee established the fair market value of the property. Due to time constraints also, McKee will stand on its argument, it's in its briefs, regarding the unrefuted evidence that a 55% difference between the fair market value of the property and the county's assessment for the 2011 tax year was not within a range of a reasonable difference of opinion. We will focus our time today on the overwhelming unrefuted evidence presented at trial on two things. First, that the valuation methodology used by David Hickey of Blue Ridge Mass Appraisal Company, the independent contractor responsible for the 2011 through 2013 assessments, is manifestly erroneous and resulted in assessments that were not arrived at in accordance with generally accepted appraisal practice. And second, that the valuation methodology used by Don Thomas of Wingate Appraisal Service, the independent contractor responsible for the county's 2014 assessment, also resulted in an assessment that was not arrived at in accordance with generally accepted appraisal practice. Regarding the
counsel,
standard,
assuming you're right about Hickey and Thomas, what about Harvey? In other words, why can't the county say, okay, well, we lost on Hickey and Thomas, nevertheless, Harvey supplies an independent basis for a court to conclude that the higher valuation was the correct one?
Mr. Harvey was not the person who is responsible for the assessment that's at issue in this case, and the record amply shows that Mr. Harvey valued the property at a substitute use as a distribution warehouse rather than its highest and best use as a manufacturing building, and there were a legion other issues with Mr. Harvey's appraisal. But he's not the officer who is responsible for the county's assessment, which is what's
right,
at issue.
Right, but the trial court, I mean, isn't it, once you knock out the presumption, isn't it kind of a free-for-all for the trial court to figure out, well, which expert is right?
It could be considered a free-for-all. It's certainly what I would call a battle of the experts at that point. The issue here is that the only decision that the trial court announced that it made was that McKee's evidence was not sufficient to overcome the presumption of correctness, and it did so, and this is the critical part here. It did so because it said both sides had opposing evidence for the trial court to consider. And when we're looking at the assessment methodology, the evidence of that with respect to David Hickey and Don Thomas, the evidence was not refuted largely with Mr. Thomas other than his self-serving testimony and not at all with regard to Mr. Hickey's testimony. So where is there evidence to balance? And that's the issue that's the central issue in this case. After hearing, let me just back up and talk about real quickly the principle that we're relying on. The United States
Supreme Court. Just a second. You talk about the flaws in the methodology, but doesn't the statute require you to prove two things if you're going to get this assessment change? You have to prove a flaw in the methodology, and you also have a burden of proof concerning showing by preponderance of the evidence the fair market value of the property.
That is correct.
And I think that kind of ties into what Justice McCullough was talking about. And when we get to determining the fair market value of the property, we've got Mr. Harvey's testimony, which gives one fair market value, and then we've got your witness, who gives another fair market value.
That is correct.
But
the issue where we're left today is that the trial court, in making its decision, didn't announce a decision in that regard. At best, what you could say is that if this court disagrees that the trial court did not implicitly find that McKee established the fair market value of the property.
Let me stop you right there. When you say established, what does established mean to you? Because I saw you you quoted a circuit court case that said, you know, you need to establish fair market value. What does that mean?
Okay, establishing fair market value means that simply what it says, that the trial court makes a decision that the plaintiff or the taxpayer in this particular instance has established what the fair market value of the property is for each of the tax years in issue, and there is a definition established by this court for what constitutes fair market value. The issue here is...
By establishing, wouldn't you have to use the statutory standard for establishment, which means that the proponent has to prove by preponderance of the evidence the fair market value?
That is correct.
So you have to establish it by preponderance of the evidence.
That is correct. And then if you look at the case that we're relying on, which is the case that the county repeatedly urged the trial court to follow in this case, the Judge Ludwig states that he sets forth these governing principles in the order that courts must consider them. The threshold inquiry, it says, is to establish the fair market value of the property, and with that, without that, the inquiry ends. So when you follow the order of analysis that the trial court was urged to follow.
So the first thing you have to do is prove fair market value by preponderance of the evidence.
Correct.
Okay.
And then once you've established the fair market value of the property, then according to the principles that the trial court was urged to follow, the next step is to proceed through there and determine whether the evidence was sufficient to rebut the presumption of correctness. In this case, the trial court announced its ruling from the bench, and I agree it would have been helpful to have a written opinion. But when we asked the trial court for the basis for its decision, the trial court said that it was specifically and expressly and solely in regard to the presumption of correctness, and the trial court said both sides had evidence that left the case in equipoise.
Well, doesn't it mean right there that you didn't prove by preponderance of the evidence the fair market value?
No, Your Honor, it does not. Because either the trial judge followed the case law that he was urged to follow by the county and found that without stating it, or he made no finding at all.
Right.
And if that's where the court left it, was no finding on fair market value, McKee maintains that there's two things that could happen. McKee maintains that the evidence is sufficient for this court to make that determination without remanding the case, but in any event, otherwise, this court would need to remand the case to the trial court for a finding on that issue. Because if it wasn't implicitly made, it wasn't made at all.
Well, in other words, it would have ended right there if you hadn't made that threshold showing. Game over. We don't need to get into manifest error. We don't need to get into GAAP principles. Whatever.
That is correct.
But the court never said that you did, so you don't know whether it did that or not.
And neither does this court. And that's where we're left today. Is either the judge? I mean, I think that it's important to understand that this court's case law says that cases come on with the presumption that the trial court followed the correct law.
But it can't be what you say, because the court could not have implicitly believed that you proved the preponderance of the evidence and then state that the evidence is in equipoise. They're completely inconsistent with each other.
If that's the case, then the court should send it back to the trial court for clarification of what the trial court meant. Because if you follow what the case law says, without making an announcement of a ruling on the fair market value of the property and only addressing the issue of the evidence regarding a presumption of correctness, then we're left with the need to understand what the trial court's doing here, because there certainly isn't any, there certainly is not an equipoise with respect to the evidence.
May I ask you this, Mr. Smith? Tell me if I understand it right. I mean, the basic idea is government gets to do what it wants to do within a range of debatability, like the fairly debatable test in zoning. So just coming in and saying the government got it wrong is never going to be enough on average in these kind of judicial review cases. So tell me if this makes sense. The taxpayer's got to come in and say, well, it is wrong. It's actually wrong. They didn't do it correctly. And that's the threshold showing. The law then says, okay, well, so what? Is it manifest error? Is it really, really, really wrong? How wrong is it? Because everybody can hire somebody to get an expert to say the other side's argument. And then you drop into the, well, at least before the statutory change, just manifest error. It's really wrong. Or to use a more familiar phrase, it's not even fairly debatable what they did. Now, you can accept what I said, Judge, the fair market value is, or you can not accept it, but what they did was way wrong to the point of you can't accept their number. And then the court has to decide whether to accept your number or to hear other evidence. Am I oversimplifying this too much?
I don't believe so. I mean, it would be probably an easier process if these trials were bifurcated into two pieces where you establish one and then had a decision and then establish the other. But when you're dealing with a case in chief at trial, you put on your case with respect to everything that you've got. So we put on the case to show why there's manifest error or the assessments were not arrived at in accordance with generally accepted appraisal practice. And then in tandem with that, we put on evidence of what the fair market value of the property is. In this particular case...
So in theory, if I can interrupt, in theory, you could have two debates where you have just different fair market value valuations, but one of them's not manifestly wrong, and they're both in compliance with GAAP principles. It's just you disagree, in which case, obviously, you'd lose that argument.
That, I would agree with that, and I think that that's reflected in the cases that talk about what's a reasonable difference of opinion between...
Can I stop you right there?
Yes.
And I think that's exactly right. So you've got this debate where you're just talking about fair market value, and you've got two people who've given what the fair market value is, and both of them are doing it within accounting appraisal principles. That's exactly your case, because you got Mr. Harvey and you've got your expert talking about fair market value, not talking about methodology. And the judge had both of them in front of him, and he says they were at equipoise. I couldn't tell which one was right.
But he did not say that there was any evidence in equipoise with respect to the issue of fair market value. He said that there was evidence in equipoise with respect to the overcoming or rebutting the presumption of correctness.
But the threshold issue in doing that is proving by preponderance of the evidence the fair market value.
And that's a separate inquiry.
Now, Mr. Harvey came up higher, right, than Mr. Hickey and Mr. Thomas?
I believe that's correct. I don't have the numbers in front of me.
I mean, not by a wide margin, but the court didn't say, well, you know what, because I credit Harvey, here's the new figure. He defaulted to the older figures of Hickey and Thomas. So if that's what makes this perplexing to me, is that if the court had said, look, here's one expert, it's Harvey, here's your two experts, Lefander, I may be pronouncing that wrong, and Holtzman. I find Harvey more credible for all these reasons, therefore the new number is X, which is the number Harvey reached. That's not what happened. So we default to this presumption, which seems to indicate he accepted Hickey and Thomas as authoritative, legitimate methodologies. One wasn't licensed, and the other, I can't figure out what he was doing.
And then when you look at Mr. Harvey's appraisal, you see that he valued the property at a substitute use.
Right, I understand, and there are all the criticisms of that.
Right. Right, and so when you look at everything that we're dealing with in context, it appears to me from the argument we're having here today is that this court is left to speculate at what the trial court did, which is sort of the position that McKee Foods is in. Except what we do know is that the trial court said that both sides had evidence that left the case in equipoise, and the evidence is overwhelming that that's not true. That did not happen. And I'm running short on time here to go through step by step, but we think
I mean, typically we don't make credibility findings unless it's just a real, you know, just manifest error, that kind of thing. And we don't knock out factual findings. So it may be, were I the trial judge, I'd say, you know, Lefander, I mean, he's the guy who wrote the book, and I found him more credible. But it's hard on this record to say, right? I mean, that's our dilemma as an appellate court.
Well, and that's why we believe that the standard of review here is that it's plainly wrong or without evidence to support it. And it's really simple. When you look at the evidence, and we'll just talk about Mr. Hickey in particular since we're running short on time. Mr. Hickey wasn't available to testify due to infirmity, so McKee read sections of his deposition transcript into the record at trial. The county put on no evidence in response to that deposition transcript testimony other than to add a single page, and that was solely for the purpose to show what his value conclusion was regarding a neighboring manufacturing plant. We went through then Mr. Lifflander's review of Mr. Hickey's testimony or his valuation model, and Mr. Lifflander described to the court what the problems were with it, and it essentially came down to just being a simple arithmetic formula, which this court has said is not proper appraisal methodology. That's all the trial court heard. There was no opposing evidence that the trial court heard. Where is it then, tell me where is it then, that the trial court was able to say that both sides had opposing evidence that left it in equipoise? That is plainly wrong and without evidence to support it. We went through the same process with respect to Mr. Thomas's valuation methodology, where the only refuting evidence, if you want to call it, was Mr. Thomas's self-serving testimony in response to what he had already testified to as an adverse witness on behalf of McKee. We also put on Mr. Lifflander's review of Mr. Thomas's valuation methodology for the trial court to consider, and that was not contradicted or rebutted either. So again, where is the opposing evidence that the trial court said was there? The issue isn't whether the county has a responsibility to come forward with any evidence. The issue is that the trial court said it found opposing evidence and there was none presented. And I see that my time has expired. We respectfully request that the court grant the relief that McKee has requested. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Ms. Panda.
May it please the court, Sharon Pandak on behalf of County of Augusta with Associate Zach Packard sitting at council table. Your Honor, I want to first correct one matter in our brief. There's an indication on page 3 that the county made a motion to strike. That is incorrect. If you look at the record, you will see that I mentioned it to the trial court, but I didn't proceed, and I neglected to pull that from the final brief. Turning to the matter at hand, Your Honor, what we have here are years of assessments by the county of a food processing plant, which is approaching 1 million square feet, nearly 15 football fields.
May I ask you this? Assume, for the benefit of my question, that Mr. Hickey's appraisal is just inadequate. It is not acceptable. And assume, wholly for the benefit of my question, that Thomas didn't do much better. Is there any evidence in this record the trial judge said to himself or to herself, yeah, but the Harvey number works good enough?
Your Honor, the court said equipoise. He also said that he did not find that the county did anything wrong in making the assessments. Assuming your points, which I don't, this court has said that it doesn't focus on the methodology. It focuses on whether the taxpayer has proved that the assessment exceeds fair market value. So even if you are correct, then the county would still win because the county, at least on the issue of fair market value, the county has posited Mr. Harvey. I do not find any law that says that the court must go through and list all of those findings. And in fact, if you look at the Orchard Glen case, which is where the term equipoise appears in a tax assessment case as opposed to other types of cases, the court says we're not going to get into this issue of one expert opinion versus another expert opinion. And so I think if under your extreme circumstances, the county still wins. In fact, the law has been this court for a long time that the county is not required to put on evidence in support of its assessment.
If that may very well may be the law, but if that is the law, does that mean this, that municipal assessments can be just flat out wrong, we violate GAAP rules, we hire contractors who are not properly credentialed to do this kind of work, they come up with a number, you get sued, and then you hire a real expert?
No, sir. I want to go back, and I do respectfully disagree to a couple of premises there. One is that that the assessors did not follow generally accepted assessment practices.
I'm asking a hypothetical. If it's the way the law works, does the law work from your experience point of view in a way that the municipality can come up with fair market valuations that are just not credible based upon the lack of, just not right, but then get sued and then hire a real expert that comes in and says, well, if you do it correct, you come to basically the same number. Is that the way the law works?
Your Honor, theoretically that might have happened before the statute was amended in 2011, but that statute now requires that the assessment be made in accordance with generally accepted appraisal practices, which specifically indicate the International Assessing Officer's standard.
Yeah, which is assessment? The assessment of the expert hired for trial or the actual assessment of the actual property by the actual municipality,
the
actual Hickey, and Thomas, not
Yes, sir, the actual assessment. The appraisal gets into the whole issue of whether the appraisers, the expert independent appraisers that are presented to trial are qualified by the judge to testify, which they were here. And then you get into what the court says. We're not going to get into this battle of experts and have the court start trying to figure out what expert is right. And that's exactly what the trial court did here. The trial court looked at the whole body of the evidence, said, well, there's evidence on both sides. That doesn't overcome the presumption.
I'm sorry to not let you go on this, but let's suppose the actual assessment was based upon an appraisal that was not pursuant to GAA. Just assume that for the sake of argument. And you go in, you get sued. And the evidence says, yeah, the actual assessment in this case was done with an appraisal that wasn't in compliance with the statutory change post-January 2012. But we just hired an expert. And he's going to do it right, pursue it to the proper GAAP principles, and he comes up with the same number. Is that okay?
After the 2011 amendment, 2012, Your Honor, I don't believe if the locality cannot demonstrate that the assessors acted in accordance with good assessment practices, generally accepted assessment practices, GAAP, as it's known, then the county's not going to be able to go forward on that.
Okay, I don't want to lead you down the path too far, but I am leading you down a path. Be aware.
That seems to be at odds with the statute.
Sir?
What you said seems to be at odds with the statute, because the statute says you have to have the appraisers do an appraisal in compliance with International Association of Assessing Officers, but the plaintiff also has to prove by preponderance of the evidence the fair market value.
That's correct. Yes, sir. I'm sorry. Justice Kelsey was taking me on one track, and I thought we were talking about the IAAO and the generally accepted appraisal standards.
I think he was talking about what does it take in order for a plaintiff to prevail.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know absolutely all of it, what it will take, and I've thought about that a little bit, but I don't think it's found in this case. And so I am wary about saying...
And say, excuse me, because I cut across Justice Kelsey, and you should answer this question.
Okay.
So let me see if I can shorten it, because you don't have much time. There are two questions, right? They got to come in and say, this number's wrong. The right number, the right fair market value is X, not Y. They said Y. I'm telling you, that's just wrong. It's X. The law says, well, so what? People can make mistakes. Governments get a lot of leeway. You got to show it's really, really wrong, or they didn't do it pursuant to generally accepted principles. They come in and they say, well, you're assumed for the sake of argument, you're not conceding anything, by the way. If they come in and say, yeah, your guys didn't do it right. It was completely messed up and it was below the threshold. And our guy, Holzman, he did it right, and the number's completely different. There's my fair market value. I'll put that on the table right now. It's not anywhere near yours. It's much, much less. And you come in with a brand new expert that says, I assume that I lose that. My guy didn't do it right under the 2012 GAAP principle. But we just hired a guy who did, and he came up with the same number. Now, my only question is a structural question. It's not just your case. It's how the statute works, and I don't know the answer to it. That's why I'm asking it. Can you do that? And I think you implied earlier, no, you can't do it after the fact. The actual appraisal has got to be based upon a compliant. The actual assessment has got to be based upon a compliant appraisal. Okay, did I?
That's correct. After the statute was amended, that is correct. It
okay,
was implicit,
big,
perhaps, in the earlier statute. But
that's a big concession that I'm asking you to consider. Are you okay with that?
Well, I still think that you've got to show, the taxpayer's got to show fair market
but
value.
That's a no-brainer. I get that. I don't know why we keep coming back to that. They did that. They hired an expert. They said, here's our fair market value. And no one said it was wrong. And it obviously isn't on its face wrong. You didn't even contest it.
Right, and then the statute does use the term, the word, and with respect to generally accepted appraisal practices.
Right.
And that's why I think that the hypothetical that you talk about in which the assessors, unlike the assessors in this case, said that they followed IAAO, they followed generally accepted appraisal practices, they followed Virginia law, that under your hypothetical, it would be a very difficult case for the county to come in and argue that they're entitled to the presumption and that they win.
That's what I'm thinking too, actually.
But that's not this case, Your Honor. That's not this case at all on the facts, because whether or not Mr. Hickey's sort of pieced together deposition, it's unfortunate he was not available for trial, but oftentimes witnesses die or incapacitated. But he clearly said he followed IAAO, he followed Virginia law. That's important.
But it's hard to escape the testimony where he basically talks about he's working towards a number, and he, in the sort of back of the envelope in his mind, comes up with a lower figure because the initial one was too high. I mean, it just seemed to lack any kind of rigor that is manifested by the other experts.
Your Honor, I don't think you can just take that out of context, and that's the problem with the deposition, is that that's
what we have.
And that is based on the question that was asked of opposing counsel of Mr. Hickey at the time. So we have that. We also have, if you've looked at the appendix, a mountain of documents that support how the assessments were done that were provided by Mr. Hickey.
But as I understand what he did, he just took a whole bunch of sales. I mean, I thought the analogy seemed apt that you just take every house down the street, you know, ramshackle, about to fall in, mansions, you throw it all together into a tossed salad, and then you average it all out, and then here's your number. It just doesn't seem to make any sense.
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully say that we as jurists and lawyers should not step into the shoes of the assessor who does that. In fact, there's a case...
Well, we can't abdicate our duty to determine whether to review the evidence to see if it complies with any kind of standard.
And that's what the trial judge did in this case, is he sat and he listened to all of that testimony for over 3.5 days and concluded that the answer was that the taxpayer hadn't proven his case. I will posit to the court, and I can't remember the site right off, that the court said that it was acceptable to try to reduce the valuations to a cost per square foot and then use that as an ability in order to calculate what the assessment might be. This court has said that that is acceptable before, just as the court has said before that it's acceptable to use only the cost method, which is what Mr. Thomas did, because he found using IAAO, which is different than what the private appraisers use. They are bound by use.
What about the licensure issue with him? So you have, you know, the pitch to the county is, well, here's, you know, the company, here's the person with all the credentials or whatever, and then that gets delegated to somebody who is, now is, but at the time was not, a commercial real estate appraiser.
Your Honor, a couple of responses to that. First, some of the material put in the reply brief by McKee was not in the record before the judge. Mr. Thomas testified that he had not been found in violation of any standards in Virginia. In fact,
he
did not acknowledge he violated the standards. In fact, he had a certification from the state tax commissioner, the Department of Taxation, which is the entity that certifies those persons who can conduct assessments. And Judge Lane listened to all of that testimony and all of the hypotheticals about how bad Mr. Thomas's background was that were posited by McKee's counsel, not by evidence, and the judge said, I find him qualified to testify,
there's a qualification of an expert, which is a pretty low threshold of, is this esoteric compared to the average juror? It's absolutely, real estate assessment is. Next question, do you know more than that, and you have some, yes, absolutely. So being qualified at trial to testify, it's a much lower bar than having a licensure. I mean, you can have a law professor who has no licensure but is qualified to testify as an expert but has no licensure to actually go into court and try a case.
Your Honor, what I would say is just the corollary to that, that if McKee had true evidence that Mr. Thomas was not qualified to make that assessment, they should have brought that into the court from the state tax commissioner saying he was not qualified.
Did Mr. Thomas use USPAP standard 6.6-8?
You'll have to refresh my recollection on that, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I don't recall the number. But
did
the
Mr.
6
Thomas
is a mass appraisal.
That he did not use USPA standard 6-8, which governs mass appraisals. Did he concede that?
Your Honor, what Mr. Thomas conceded said was that he used 6.1 in the IAAO standards, which tell him that when he values or considers a property to be special purpose, that he looks and he, the cost method is preferred.
So
and that's the appropriate for mass
USPAP,
appraisals.
USPAP 6-8. If you use that, could it comply with it?
Your Honor, I have to say I've forgotten what 6.8 is. I apologize if you want to address
he,
it. But
he said that it was inapplicable jurisdictionally to local government officials, and yet he wasn't one. That was his argument.
He is not a local government official. That is correct. But again, I think this is a total red herring, because what McKee does not have is any evidence from the state tax commissioner who is charged with determining who can make assessments and who cannot. And that's pretty important, because it affects other funding with respect to local governments. And Mr. Thomas had received certification from the state tax commissioner. That is a decision that I think was appropriately within the trial court's purview, and the court decided it appropriately. In solemnness, Your Honor, I think what you have is McKee looking for ways to not even using highest and best use, which is the current use, in order to get what they call a fair market value, which is based on highest and best use, that is not, in fact, the most valuable use, and not, in fact, consistent with what this court has held on numerous occasions, that they must demonstrate. They do not prove that generally accepted appraisal practices were not used by the assessors. They do not prove that Mr. Harvey did not appropriately appraise the property. He said, and you'll look in his appraisal, you'll find how he valued it within the I-81 quarter, which is where this building is. That's the appropriate market, and came up with a value that supports that the fair market value determined by the locality was not in excess of fair market value.
And your time has expired. Call the next case.